listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the December 2020 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Here's the continuation of Charlotte's Web by Mark Seal. At one point, Meyer was in the hole for several million, and not to Hollywood card sharks like those his former son-in-law, Toby Maguire, gambled with. This wasn't some casino on the strip, the journalist James Andrew Miller wrote in Powerhouse, an oral history of CAA. The guys Meyer was on the hook to only swam in the deep end of the pool. Forever an agent, Meyer negotiated with his creditors, which enabled him to leave that meeting alive, both legs operative, genitalia intact, according to Powerhouse. But the gambling only grew until he was one of the biggest craps players ever, a source recently told the Daily Mail. Casino player development executives reportedly baited him with credit and kept him at the tables with perks like helicopter flights to private gambling palaces until he had racked up almost unfathomable losses. A source close to Meyer says he hasn't gambled in almost 4 years. By this August, Meyer had become divorced from his wife, Kelly, 2018, and sold his magnificent Malibu home for $100 million, 2019. But the hardest blow was yet to come. Next photos, Kirk and Company. Chujihara, Kirk and director Joshua Newton, a former boyfriend. Hollywood legal heavyweight Marty Singer. Kirk and fiancé Neil Marshall, the British screenwriter-director. On the other side of town, from the moguls and the movie premieres, Charlotte Kirk was pouring her heart out on stage from 9 p.m. till past midnight at the Hollywood Actors Showcase in the San Fernando Valley. "I flew from England to Hollywood to become a star," a colleague recalls Kirk announcing from the stage at the Thursday night industry showcase, where aspiring actors parade their talents before an audience dominated by directors, producers, and casting professionals. It sounds almost cliche, but that's almost verbatim. It wasn't like, "I want to be a working actress." It was, "I want to be a star." In 2012, stardom was still a distant dream for Kirk, but her first taste of success with the never widely released film Black Dog, Red Dog had only whetted her appetite. She was a must-hire, says one of Black Dog, Red Dog's producers, familiar with the decision to give her the non-speaking role of the intern, even though another actress had already been cast. The switch was supposedly made over the objections of the director. "They told me that she had to be cast. She had to be given a line in order to be given a SAG card, even though she didn't have any screen credit," says the producer. "I dreamed of being Vivian Leigh kissing Clark Gable," Kirk told Authority magazine in 2018 in a rare interview she gave about her career. "And I certainly hoped to emulate Hilary Swank stepping up on stage to collect her Oscar. But Hollywood seemed a million miles away to me then." "It's not been an easy journey," her mother, Angie Kirk, told the Daily Mail in 2019. "From her working-class roots, she's had to overcome many hurdles along the way. Diagnosed with Asperger's as a young girl, she struggled at school. But she's tough. She's a fighter. She always has been." In the beginning, modeling became her ticket. In 2008 and 2009, when she was 15, going on 16, she began chronicling her far-flung life on Facebook. Getting ready to go to London, she posted. Getting ready to go to Mexico. Gotten new pics. It's all about sex on fire. Effed up last night. On March 30th, 2011, when she was 18, soon turning 19, she wrote, in Dubai, April 9th, 2011, in Las Vegas, April 9th, 2011, change of plan, right now in Milwaukee. Would I lie to you, baby? She wrote in 2009. Wicked song, very old, but still, the older, the better, like men, LOL. Back home in the London suburbs, she began taking the train to the city to study acting. After graduating from drama school, I packed up and moved to the U.S., she would tell her interviewer. Once there, Kirk not only survived, but thrived. Charlotte always wanted to advance her career on the merit of talent, says a colleague. But she saw an environment where men were behaving in a predatory way, and she played prey on purpose to say, hey, if these men are going to rise to power by cheating, by scheming, by taking advantage of people, I'm going to play their game the only way I can, which is to use my feminine power to turn them into putty. If they're going to reject me, unless they feel they have a chance with me sexually, then I'll go ahead and take advantage of that. A knowledgeable source with access to court filings and other evidence insist that there is no credible evidence that Charlotte Kirk ever said such a thing. The website for the Hollywood Actors Showcase, run by the acting coach Bobby Chance, claims credit for launching many a young actor's career, and its signature event is its industry showcase. Every Thursday night, actors vie for attention before an audience of professionals, with cocktails to follow for many at nearby Casa Vega, the old-school Mexican restaurant featured in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The girls network aggressively, says Jana Grazer, a producer who participated in the showcase as an actor and later attended with her husband, director Gavin Grazer, brother of Imagine Entertainment co-founder Brian Grazer. My husband went there when he was single to pick up girls. I'm pretty much the only woman who goes in there, basically to keep watch over what goes on. The evening begins with an announcement introducing the industry pros in attendance. Then the performance begins. Grazer vividly recalls watching Kirk, who was wearing black pantyhose and a short, tight black dress. She did a scene with a gun and wrestled her scene partner to the ground. She reminded me of a young Nicole Kidman. Grazer was impressed, she says, until she attempted to hit on my husband. After the acting ends, the networking begins. They rush over and give out their headshots and resumes, recalls Grazer, who says that on the night in question, she returned from the restroom to see Kirk with her husband, grabbing his arm and handing him her resume, headshot, and contact information. I was like, who the hell does she think she is? They announced that we're married. She snatched Kirk's resume and headshots out of her husband's hands. That was enough for me not to let Gavin go to the showcase anymore. A knowledgeable source says that Grazer's account is entirely false. Kirk met another potential connection at the showcase. Joshua Newton was a fellow Brit who had directed the revenge thriller Iron Cross. He was more than 20 years older than Charlotte, and he quickly tried to help make her a star, says the fashion photographer Jacques Silberstein, who often photographed Kirk. When he met her, she had absolutely no experience. She wanted to become a singer, and he put her in a video. She wanted to be an actress, and he cast her as the star in a movie he was making. Newton would eventually fly Kirk to Bulgaria, where he would direct her in her first starring role, playing Nicole Brown Simpson in Nicole and O.J., based on the premise that O.J. Simpson had been framed. The unfinished film has yet to be released, but parts of it were screened. Joshua rented a screening room, and Charlotte was there as the star of the movie. But she was there with a new boyfriend, says Silberstein. It was yet another British filmmaker for whom she had auditioned, Neil Marshall, the director of the 2019 movie Hellboy, and two episodes of Game of Thrones, including the famous Battle of the Blackwater set piece from season 2. The text read, "If you were going to be effing someone for a part, it should be a director or a producer." It was September 2015, and director-producer Brett Ratner was texting Charlotte Kirk, spelling out the rules of sex and power in Hollywood, to which an industry source says Ratner added a caveat, "If a director or producer is offering a part in exchange for sex, he or she is not legitimate." "KT cannot get you jobs or auditions," Ratner fumed. "I told you this many times. Stop asking." But Charlotte and KT had already had sex. Kevin Chujihara had only been CEO of Warner Brothers Entertainment for 7 months when he and Kirk met in September 2013. The aftermath of their relationship would later spill out in an extraordinary Hollywood Reporter story by Kim Masters and Tatiana Siegel, which revealed an eye-popping collection of text that somebody, it was never revealed who, sent to the magazine. The son of egg distributors from Petaluma, California, Chujihara had been chosen to run the studio at the young age of 48 after a long, fiercely contested battle for the throne. His fall would be abrupt and bitter. Kirk, then 21, had entered Chujihara's world via an affair with James Packer. She'd come to know the 45-year-old Australian billionaire at a precarious moment in his life. He was in the process of blowing $100 million in Hollywood, according to his biographer Damon Kitney's book, The Price of Fortune. Packer arrived there in 2013, booking the $18,000 a night presidential suite at the storied Hotel Bel Air for an indefinite stay, and proceeded to embark on an epic meltdown, fueled by booze, a bottle of vodka a day, usually swigged straight from the bottle, women, including a short engagement to singer Mariah Carey, prescription meds, and ill-fated business deals. The rugged 6'6" Aussie was worth some $6 billion, thanks to his inheritance from his late father, the media baron Carey Packer. He had come to L.A. to work with Ratner, who would later be accused of sexual harassment and misconduct by six women. Ratner has denied all charges. Packer and Ratner formed a production company called Rat Pack Entertainment. In October 2013, Rat Pack and Dune Entertainment, owned by future Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, signed a 4-year financing deal with Warner Brothers and New Line, in which Rat Pack and Dune put up $450 million to fund Warner's entire slate of up to 75 films. On September 27, 2013, 3 days before the deal with Warner Brothers closed, Packer and Chujihara were celebrating over dinner in Packer's Bel Air suite when, as the Hollywood Reporter recounted, Packer reached for his phone. "I have the opportunity of a lifetime for you," he texted Kirk that night. "Come to Bel Air now. You will never be able to repay me." He was going to introduce her to the most important man you can meet, he added. Kirk soon arrived at the verdant grounds of the Bel Air, the fabled L.A. retreat, where Marilyn Monroe posed for her final photo shoot. "He's not very nice," Kirk texted Packer about her encounter with Chujihara. "Very pushy. He just wants to F. Nothing else, does not even want to say anything, and these texts are full of misspellings. You okay? Packer responded. Be cool. Kirk hadn't come to Hollywood to play it cool. She began pushing the Warner Brothers chief, and by the following October, she texted Packer that Chujihara was very kindly looking at what he can do to help me now that my career is starting to take off. I'm really happy for you, Packer replied. Just don't want to overpromise. Sending you good energy. 4 days later, she turned back to Packer. Putting me in one of your many movies shouldn't be a big deal. I did help you out with Kevin, which was hard for me, but I did it for you. Hey, that's not being cool, Packer replied, flinching at the mention of Chujihara's name. I didn't expect to be part of a business deal, so all I'm asking is you just help me with a couple of roles. It's not big deal, and then we'll just put this all behind us, Kirk wrote. Now, Packer felt like you were trying to blackmail me over a lie, he wrote. Don't push me. You'll regret it. James, if you're trying to make me worry about my safety, you'll be forcing me to give this to my attorneys. Can't wait, tough girl. Get back in your box or let's fight. Lying and blackmail are a bad start. As for Chujihara, he and Kirk met for a second time on February 24th, 2014, 5 months after their first night together. Kirk was waiting for him at a West Hollywood boutique hotel called Palace House. When Chujihara reportedly texted from the car asking her to order him a Grey Goose martini with olives. No sex on that occasion, but they had a tryst the next time at a motel. Their text seemed to reveal a twisted relationship. One night, Kirk asked Chujihara about a screening he'd attended. It was good, but I would rather have watched your video on loop for a night, he answered, referring to a smoldering, sex-pantomiming music video she'd made for a song called I Get the Feeling Again. You make me blush, she replied, before getting back to business. Had Chujihara spoken to his guys about her audition for a Warner-affiliated TV show? Yes, I spoke to our guys. I caused a bit of a stir, he wrote. I don't usually call about casting about these types of roles. It's fine. I just need to be careful. Wish I was doing something else, he texted. Such as, I remember how good you were at, you're a giver, with a smiley face. She replied. But he hadn't given her what she wanted most. Kevin, a two-liner? You have got to be kidding me, she texted about her minuscule role in the forthcoming romantic comedy How to Be Single. She was turning up the heat. Please make sure that New Line President Richard Brenner accepts or returns my agent's calls, as he requested, so that I can get the help you promised me before luring me to that motel to have sex with you. She tried a more direct approach in a text she sent on March 3, 2015. You're very busy, I know, but when you were in that motel having sex, you said you would help me, and when you just ignore me like you're doing now, it makes me feel used. Sorry you feel that way, he replied. Richard will be reaching out to you tonight. Alarmed by the escalating pressure, Chujihara turned for help to Ratner, who soon got similar treatment. You know what you need to do, Kirk texted Ratner. You haven't even come close to doing it. If you thought I would be so easily manipulated, you're wrong. What are you talking about? Ratner replied. I don't work for you. Why are you so unappreciative? She demanded auditions and readings and respect. You just keep lying to me about getting me jobs, and you're not doing what Kevin told you to, she wrote Ratner, later adding that she felt used as the icing on the cake for your finance deal with Warner Brothers. It's gross what you all did to me. Ratner responded angrily that the deal had nothing to do with her, according to the Hollywood Reporter, which quoted a statement from Kirk in which she denied having any connection to the Warner Brothers Rat Pack Slate financing deal, directly or indirectly. At one point, according to the Hollywood Reporter, Ratner texted, I only promised you auditions, not jobs. He tried to get Kirk to back off. Stop writing Kevin and saying what he told me to do. I don't work for him. As I said, I don't owe you anything. If anything, you owe me for all the money James paid you. A thank you would be nice. As for Tsujihara, Ratner added, he is a married man. What are you thinking? Kirk said Packer hadn't given her anything except gifts. If Ratner didn't apologize, she added, the shit is going to hit the fan. Regardless, what you are doing is extortion and is very illegal in this country, Ratner wrote. You can't take back the extortion you have committed because you have sent texts and emails asking for these auditions and jobs. Brett, you're an idiot. I'm not extorting anyone, she replied. And her texts are full of misspellings and lack of punctuation. Then the shit did indeed hit the fan. In late summer 2016, Kirk had her attorney at the time draft a settlement agreement, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Under its terms, Kirk would supposedly get 6 auditions within the year, and Ratner would help her land a role in his next movie. The agreement was never signed. The secrets still seemed safe until November 2017, when someone contacted the Hollywood Reporter. Had they heard about Kevin Tsujihara's liaison with a young actress? Ask for a response. Tsujihara issued a denial and threatened to sue. A year later, in September 2018, an anonymous letter arrived in the office of Warner Media CEO John Stankey. Had a senior executive promised roles to an actress identified as CK? Outside counsel investigated but found no evidence, and none would arise until early 2019, when someone leaked the lurid text between the pair, which were published in the blistering Hollywood Reporter piece. Less than 2 weeks after the scandal broke, Warner Brothers announced that Tsujihara's career with the studio was over. But there were still fireworks to come. Kirk had much more to tell. On September 3rd, 2020, 7 years after her fateful first encounter with Tsujihara, Kirk filed a petition in Los Angeles Superior Court to vacate a gag order that had prevented her from telling her side. In the petition, which was officially sealed but seen by the Hollywood Reporter, she asserted that she, in fact, had been a victim of sexual abuse. The petition read like a sad script, with the famous filmland figures identified by pseudonyms, Bruce Hamilton, Clark Grandin, and Gregory Kemp, for Kevin Tsujihara, Brett Ratner, and James Packer, and Melissa Parker for Charlotte Kirk, all starring in a movie that mutated from Fatal Attraction with its scheming femme fatale into Chinatown, a murky tangle of secret pacts that would require a detective like Jack Nicholson's Jake Gittes to unravel. Whether or not consensual, what followed the night at the Hotel Bel Air appears to have been a wide-ranging cover-up that involved some of Hollywood's most powerful men, including NBC Universal Vice Chair Ron Meyer, the Hollywood Reporter's Tatiana Siegel wrote on September 23rd. After 3 years of tracking what she called the labyrinthine case. The drama had begun the evening of September 27th, 2013, in the presidential suite of the Hotel Bel Air, which was detailed in the petition quoted by Siegel. When Kirk arrived, she was introduced to a cocaine-snorting Tsujihara, CEO of Warner Brothers, who shortly thereafter left and went into another room, the petition states. Mr. Packer told Ms. Kirk that Mr. Tsujihara wanted to discuss her career further in the other room. Ms. Kirk entered the other room to find Mr. Tsujihara naked on the bed and demanding sex. When Ms. Kirk hurried to the adjoining bathroom and strongly objected by text message to Mr. Packer, he ordered her to comply by replying, "Be cool." When attempting to leave the room, the significantly taller and larger Mr. Packer blocked her from leaving and menacingly told her she had to have sex with Mr. Chujara. Desperate to have petitioner comply, Mr. Packer offered her $30,000 to do as he demanded, which she did not accept. Fearing for her personal safety, being blacklisted, and the destruction of her career before it even began, she complied with Mr. Packer's demands and engaged in non-consensual intercourse with Mr. Chujara under duress. Kirk later learned that she was Mr. Packer's offering to Mr. Chujara to further induce him to agree to a $450 million deal between Mr. Packer and Mr. Ratner and Mr. Chujihara and Warner Brothers. Sources insist, however, that the financing deal had already been fully negotiated at the time of the meeting. Separately, a draft complaint reportedly noted, "Due to her autism and difficulty interpreting people's self-interested conduct, Miss Kirk was unaware she was becoming a victim of sexual abuse. You made me sleep with Kevin," she texted Packer in 2014. "I didn't promise you anything or make you do anything." "This is a very uncool conversation. We all know the truth," Kirk texted. Chujihara's attorney, Bert H. Deixler, would vehemently deny that there was non-consensual sex between Chujihara and Kirk, or that his client was using cocaine. "Labeling such claims legally and factually baseless, manufactured many years after their brief consensual relationship to unjustly seek the payment of money. The relationship was pursued by Ms. Kirk, and at all times understood by Kevin to be entirely consensual. Moreover, an industry source says that Packer had never tried to block or coerce Kirk, noting, "A billionaire forcing someone to have sex? That claim is worth multiple eight figures. We had a brief relationship, and I tried to help her career. I genuinely only ever had good intentions for Charlotte," Packer said, in a March 2019 statement to the Sydney Morning Herald. Attorney Marty Singer, who would eventually defend the accused executives, blasted Kirk's version of events as ludicrous, offensive, and entirely false. James Packer never behaved in the manner alleged, and as Kirk himself repeatedly said in multiple television and print interviews, that she voluntarily gave, "All of her interactions with my clients were fully consensual at all times." And her text kept on telling, as revealed in a court filing, "You got me excited when we met last time. Thought it would be a regular thing," she wrote Chujihara on August 12, 2014. And on February 13, 2015, "Happy Valentine's Day," and smiley face. In the summer of 2017, Kirk turned her focus to Hellboy, the third installment of the supernatural superhero franchise created by director Guillermo del Toro. The film was produced by Millennium Films, whose founder and CEO, the now 72-year-old Israeli-American Avi Lerner, supposedly told the director, Neil Marshall, that giving Charlotte Kirk the role of Alice Monahan, a woman of Irish blood that Hellboy rescued as an infant, would save my life. It would save a lot of people's life. A knowledgeable source contends this exchange never happened. In an email to Marshall on May 12, 2017, Lerner added, "I think she would be good for the role. Also, I have another reason which I would like to talk to you about." Marshall had met Kirk during the audition process for Hellboy. A year later, after she and Joshua Newton broke up, Kirk and Marshall began a relationship. The British Helmer seemed instantly and genuinely besotted with the aspiring actress, then in her mid-20s, observed The Hollywood Reporter. He reacted with anger when Hellboy producer Larry Gordon, apparently unimpressed with Kirk's acting, refused to cast her in the film. At that point, sources say, Marshall proclaimed that he would devote himself entirely to making movies with Kirk. The role went to another actor. By then, Kirk had sought legal advice over her issues with Chujihara. It was an unholy mess that only one man would even attempt to fix. Ron Meyer, reportedly identified in court documents as Paul Stevenson. For Meyer, it was something he had done endless times before, with labor unions, actors' guilds, talent agencies, movie studios, and other individuals and entities. Meyer stepped in to defuse any potential lawsuit and help them discuss a resolution, suggesting that she mediate instead to see if they could figure out a solution, says a source close to Meyer. To avoid going to court, the four Hollywood executives, Chujihara, Packer, Ratner, and Lerner, entered private mediation with Kirk, who was accompanied by Newton. On August 8, 2017, negotiations commenced with Kirk and Newton's attorney on one side and Marty Singer representing the four men on the other. Although Meyer wasn't part of the mediation, he periodically facilitated conversations between the parties and Kirk and Newton until they reached a deal, says the source. They emerged with a settlement. Kirk would receive a total of $3 million over 2 years, plus above-the-line billing in three Avi Lerner Millennium films. For any roles that didn't materialize, she would be paid an additional $500,000 bonus. Newton would receive the first funds toward Nicole and OJ out of a misplaced desire to put this issue behind them, Singer would later write in a statement. There was supposedly another person who would stand to benefit from the agreement, though his real name would appear nowhere in its pages, Meyer himself. Kirk's then attorney alleged that Meyer's name was added secretly into the settlement agreement without having to pay any consideration. Others insist, however, that it is standard practice for attorneys drafting agreements to anonymously add parties who have helped facilitate a settlement to protect them from liability for their role. In this case, Meyer wasn't the only non-party added. Ron didn't even know it had been added and never saw it, says the source close to Meyer. Kirk and Newton both signed confidentiality agreements as part of the settlement. While such pacts, if they involve compromising sexual relationships, are now being challenged in the age of hashtag MeToo, at the time, those were the agreed-upon terms. From there, it was supposed to be lights, camera, action. Kirk and Newton soon flew off to Bulgaria, where sets recreating the homes of O.J. and Nicole Brown Simpson would be built. Most important, Kirk had top billing. The whole purpose of the Charlotte Kirk saga is for her to be a movie star at any cost, says a knowledgeable source, adding that now that she had a leading role in a film, the executives believed the matter was done. But Nicole and OJ soon stalled. After those monies were paid, Newton shot only 20 to 30 minutes of the movie, while he and his producing partners pocketed seven figures and also bought themselves a Ferrari, attorney Marty Singer wrote in his statement on September 24th. And yet, according to another knowledgeable source, the terms of the investment agreement for the film stated that Singer himself had to sign off on the purchase of the Ferrari that was used in the movie. An industry source says that the claim that Singer knew about the Ferrari purchase, or approved it, is an absolute lie. In turn, Newton's attorney Larry Caldwell would assert in a September statement, Newton categorically denies all of Martin Singer's provably false accusations against him. It seems that Nicole and OJ was in large part a vehicle for Kirk. The financing of my film to enable Ms. Kirk to have a high-profile role as a leading actress was the raison d'etre of the settlement agreement, Joshua Newton wrote in a December 2019 affidavit filed in the UK. I am witness to Mr. Meyer telling Ms. Kirk during a phone call in an intense bid to persuade Ms. Kirk not to file a lawsuit against the parties. Don't do it, Charlotte. You've got OJ. Mr. Meyer, who presented himself to me as acting in my best interest and persuaded me to become involved and enter into an agreement with the parties to finance my film, was acting instead in his own best interest and in the interest of the parties. Meyer's attorney, Howard Weitzman, responds, Newton's allegations are completely frivolous and baseless, as exemplified by the extraordinary sums he claims he is owed. Adds a source close to Meyer, Ron Meyer stepped in to help discuss a resolution and suggested Kirk mediate instead to see if they could figure out a solution. This is a deliberately misleading effort to harm his reputation. It was a complete shit show, but Meyer might have succeeded in bringing peace to the parties if not for the undeniable evidence that blew the lid off everything, Charlotte Kirk's text. The messages involving Kirk, Chujihara, and Packer had begun circulating among the media, and to get ahead of things, a statement was prepared, which Kirk approved. She claimed she wasn't a victim of casting couch sex or non-consensual sex. I emphatically deny any inappropriate behavior on the part of Brett Ratner, James Packer, and Kevin Chujihara, and I have no claims against any of them. In the hashtag MeToo era, an accuser's repeated public denials after an alleged incident may well be meaningless if they were later proved to be coerced. Kirk's declaration was quoted in the original Hollywood Reporter story, exposing the text messages, which effectively ended Chujihara's career at Warner Brothers. The situation began to escalate in the summer of 2019 when focus turned to Meyer. Kirk changed lawyers and various accusations flew, but her network appeared to still be trying to find her film roles. In late 2019, Meyer agreed to mediate with Kirk, this time over various claims, including whether or not Meyer, according to someone familiar with the case, had somehow conspired with the four other people to help himself and not help her. A settlement was reached in December. Kirk was to receive $2 million, paid in installments of $500,000. The purpose of the settlement was to stop the threats, since there were no legal claims, put the matter to rest, and be done with Charlotte, says a knowledgeable source. She got her movie role. She got money from Ron Meyer. And they came back for more. It seems I'm being targeted for disintegration by powerful men who are utilizing the full extent of their personal PR machines to discredit me and ruin my reputation and credibility, writer-director Neil Marshall wrote in a statement in September. By then, as news of his involvement with Kirk became more public, he said he had been dropped by his agency and removed from a television project he'd been hired to helm. He, too, is said to have made a claim against Meyer and NBC Universal, which has yet to come to light. Wrote Kim Masters in an October 1st Hollywood Reporter story, Marshall doesn't spell out the nature of that claim in his statement, but it appears that he believed Meyer had agreed to make a film with Kirk that Marshall would direct. Said Meyer's attorney, Howard Weitzman, the claim that any studio executive, let alone the vice chairman of NBC Universal, would promise to hire someone they had never met, nor spoken with, to direct a film, to commit to financing the project, and to make the stranger's girlfriend the lead is a ludicrous proposition, and in this case, is false. Both Marshall and Newton would contend they had separately begun the process of mediation with Meyer over their own individual claims. We had reached a point of mutually appointing a retired judge to mediate a possible settlement, wrote Marshall, when Mr. Meyer chose to break off discussions to make his entirely untrue and highly slanderous and malicious statement of extortion. There was never any mediation, says a source close to Meyer. Joshua Newton, for his part, accused Meyer of reneging on a commitment to help him make his Holocaust passion project The Will to Resist. The scandal involving Miss Kirk has not only prevented the completion of my film, Nicole and O.J., it has also substantially damaged my career, Newton stated in an affidavit last December. All of this, says Newton's attorney Caldwell, is designed to prevent Charlotte Kirk from telling her story. And while she cannot yet speak about the matter, this statement reportedly appeared in the petition to release her from her gag order. Ms. Kirk was victimized by a cabal of entertainment industry elites, each who believed they could use and abuse her with impunity and then hand her off. Second, claimants demanded that their shameful conduct remain secret. Kirk may someday emerge from this thicket to recount the full tale of her adventures in Hollywood, which would make one hell of a movie or a very scary theme park ride. But all of the executives, through their attorneys, brand the menu of accusations as merely an increasingly outlandish hunt for money, as Marty Singer would write in his statement. My clients are done with these scheming opportunists and their malicious defamatory smears, and look forward to putting an end to this menacing plot once and for all. To that end, Singer filed suit last June on behalf of his clients against Kirk, Newton, Marshall, and one of Kirk's previous lawyers for civil extortion, defined in California as obtaining money or property through force or fear. A preliminary injunction was granted by an arbitrator in July, and Singer soon came out swinging in the media. My clients are the victims of a multimillion-dollar civil extortion plot perpetrated by Charlotte Kirk, her former boyfriend Joshua Newton, and her latest paramour, Neil Marshall. This so-called legal filing is simply the latest scheme to extort my clients with ever-evolving outlandish false allegations of misconduct unless they are paid millions of dollars. The accusations of extortion have been declared provably false by the opposing attorney, Larry Caldwell. Instead, he maintains, it is a meritless civil extortion claim that now appears to have been intended to accuse his clients of extortion while avoiding legal liability for slander. To certain Hollywood insiders, however, the entire ordeal may seem like a shakedown, plain and simple, and the price tag seems startling even to them, a mind-boggling $335 million, Singer wrote in a September statement. On top of that account, sources say, is a demand for multiple millions from Meyer. A spokesman for Marshall, however, is adamant that the number is absurd. Singer's contention that the $335 million was demanded from his clients was false. We have no idea what that number is purportedly based upon, if anything. And Newton, according to his attorney, never demanded $270 million, as has been alleged. Newton was apparently arguing instead that had the case been filed in court, that sum was the amount he would have asked a jury to award him for damages to his career. And what was the blowback for Ron Meyer? This past summer, even with movie theaters closed, this was not a picture that Universal wanted the public to see. One look at this sloppy script, with the company's legendary vice chairman in a supporting role, surely caused NBC Universal chairman Jeff Shell to part ways with Meyer after the two met for lunch at Universal Studios' City Walk on August 13th. Meyer announced his resignation 5 days later. On August 24th, the alleged extortion aspect of the case was brought to the attention of the FBI by the crusading activist R.J. Cipriani, who tweets under the handle at RobinHood702. Says Cipriani, "I reached out to my FBI connections, and they are taking this very seriously. The FBI neither confirms nor denies that it is investigating." In the wake of scarred reputations and aborted careers, will any of the figures involved be able to thrive in this town again? The fates of Meyer, Tsujihara, and Ratner seem uncertain, although many expect Meyer to rise again into a new position of power. Avi Lerner is developing another feature film in the Expendables franchise, and last month, James Packer reportedly testified remotely from his $2 million superyacht as part of an Australian court hearing that is looking into dealings involving casinos in which he is heavily invested. As for Charlotte Kirk and Joshua Newton, as this article was going to press, an arbitrator's ruling from last summer was released. It stated that once the various confidentiality agreements went into effect, Newton and Kirk threatened to breach them unless they were paid additional monies, and that Newton threatened to file a lawsuit that would include confidential information. If proved, such conduct would also support a claim of civil extortion, the arbitrator wrote. Kirk and Newton had claimed they had rescinded the agreements, but neither had returned the payments they had received. In the meantime, Kirk's professional career goes on. She has by her side Neil Marshall, who publicly responded to the wave of press over the alleged extortion plot as a load of old bollocks. "What we have here is a witch hunt, plain and simple, perpetrated by overprivileged men in positions of power, aided by friends of equal standing and lack of ethics," he said, "carried out against the woman I love, my fiancée, Charlotte Kirk." But she is at long last a star. On October 6th, the U.S. premiere of Marshall's film The Reckoning, co-written by and starring Charlotte Kirk, was held, with coronavirus precautions in place, at the Mission Tiki Drive-In Theater in Los Angeles. Now here's the Proust questionnaire with an illustration by Risco. Jimmy Kimmel, the late-night host on Tube Tops, Trout, and David Letterman's Ties. What is your idea of perfect happiness? Floating in a river full of fat trout. What is your greatest fear? Danger to my children and tidal waves. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself? Gluttony. What is the trait you most deplore in others? Selfishness. What is your greatest extravagance? My Precious Moments porcelain figurine collection. What is your favorite journey? The 3 a.m. trip from the bathroom back to bed. What do you consider the most overrated virtue? Pride. On what occasion do you lie to avoid hurting feelings? What do you dislike most about your appearance? Being subject to it. Which living person do you most despise? Donald Jessica Trump. What is your greatest regret? Not spending more time with my grandparents. What or who is the greatest love of your life? My wife, Molly, is the who, and pizza is the what. When and where were you happiest? I'm a happy guy in general, but the feeling of freedom and fun I got driving around with my friends in my first car is hard to top. Which talent would you most like to have? I'd like to hit a 95-mile-per-hour fastball over the center field wall. What is your current state of mind? Grateful and uneasy. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? I wish I enjoyed exercise. If you could change one thing about your family, what would it be? I'd put my brother in a tube top. What do you consider your greatest achievement? Figuring out how to make money doing the same things that got me in trouble in high school. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what do you think it would be? If there was such a thing as karma, probably a trout with a hook in its lip. What is your most treasured possession? When he retired, David Letterman sent me a large box full of all of his ties. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery? Hopelessness. What is your favorite occupation? It seems like Judge Judy has a fun job. What is your most marked characteristic? For a person who does nothing but F around, I don't F around. Who are your favorite writers? There are many, of course, but Kurt Vonnegut Jr. always comes to mind. Who is your favorite hero of fiction? Ignatius J. Riley. Who are your heroes in real life? The doctors, nurses, and respiratory therapist who saved my son's life. What are your favorite names? Peaches and Herb. What is it that you most dislike? Ignorance and forced high fives. How would you like to die? Reluctantly. What is your motto? Mottos are for dicks. And that was the Proust questionnaire with Jimmy Kimmel. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.